Call me unkind, call me vicious, but I always take a degree of, and I will admit to this, malicious pleasure in welcoming back to the microphone Stephen Mayne, online columnist, shareholder, activist and founder of crikey.com.au, after he's had yet another unsuccessful tilt at some campaign, some office, somewhere. Stephen Mayne, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Virginia. I didn't think there was any doubt that I would be back. Mr. 2%, they call me.
Can I just ask you, look, it's a really simple question. Why do you keep doing it?
Well, I'm a professional candidate.
Yeah, but it's not about being a professional candidate unless you can be any good at it.
Well, no, I'm a combination of candidate, of journalist and activist, and I've run 35 times for different, you know, corporates and political situations, and I write and talk about the experience. And I'm absolutely over the moon with having experienced the federal election for the first time.
You had fun, did you?
I mean, sitting on the big Toorak booth for 4 hours was just a hoot. I mean, you get to hand out your how-to-vote card to billionaires like Solly Lou and Lindsay Fox and Hugh Morgan and all these sort of pillars of the Melbourne establishment.
So how were they when they saw you, Stephen? Describe
well,
the
picture for them. They all accepted my card. I mean, my old boss, Alan Stockdale, who was the treasurer, Jeff Kennett's treasurer, yes, of Victoria, who I ratted on in a major way as a former staffer who then went on Four Corners and attacked them all. And he actually stopped for a chat, shook my hand, took my card, introduced me to Dominique Collins, Peter Collins' former wife, who's now Alan Stockdale's wife. Yes. And we had a couple of minutes chat, and it was all very civil. So, no, I had a great time, and I was delighted to finish fourth out of eight candidates, because it's the first time in 35 tilts I've ever finished in the front half of the field.
That's pretty good. But the 2% that you won, that doesn't give you any money, does it?
No, I would have made a profit of $3,000 if I'd got 4%. So I'm not quite in Pauline Hanson territory where
no,
she might
did all,
make
didn't
a...
She?
Well, she's at 4.05 before postals. I think she might actually slip under 4 because she won't do very well with the postals and the pre-polls. So, but yeah, if she does stay by 4%, she gets $2.10 per vote, which is a real scandal, to be honest. I mean, down here in Victoria, in state elections, you only get money back if you can prove you've had expenses to the same level, whereas at a federal level, you can spend a dollar and make a million, and no one says, you know, you can't make a profit. So I would have made a profit if I got 4%, because I only spent $5,000 on my campaign, and if I got 4%, I would have made $8,000 from the taxpayer, which, frankly, is a bit of a rort, and I'm almost glad I didn't get it.
Yeah, it is a rort, and I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see if anything changes in relation to that, because, you know, just look, in an individual's case, say like Pauline Hanson, it might only work out to be less than $200,000, but that's $200,000 out of the taxpayer's purse.
It is. I love Nick Xenophon's approach. He's offered a money-back guarantee where he's going to receive... it must be close to 300,000, I think, because he got 15% of the vote across South Australia. But anyone who donated money to him, he had a contract with them and said, I'll give you back your money, provided I've got a surplus left over from my public funding. So all the people who helped him out in his campaign are going to get all their donations returned to them. And that's the sort of, you know, public-spirited approach to... campaign finance and donations I'd love to see Xenophon bring into the federal
look,
parliament.
He'll be fascinating to watch. And as someone who's a bit of a sort of a maverick gadfly yourself, Stephen Mayne, you would feel, I'm sure, some fraternity with someone like Nick Xenophon.
Particularly his
anti-pokey stand.
Oh, look, I spoke to him on Saturday night. I spent a couple of hours with him during the election in Melbourne. We sort of helped each other and talked to each other. I'm a huge fan of his, and I'm just over the moon that he's going to be sharing in the balance of power, because he has given the major parties such grief in South Australia on things like rorts and the gravy train. And just watch, he will use his position to lever out a whole range of corporate governance improvements, things like political parties having to reveal their balance sheets. I mean, in Australia, it is a disgrace that, you know, the Labor Party in Queensland can have more than $100 million of assets and it's not disclosed. And Xenophon will be all over good governance and rorts and travel allowances and all that sort of stuff. So he will be an absolute breath of fresh air into the parliament, and I'm really excited about what he's going to do.
Now, did you have any direct dealings with your main rival in the seat of Higgins, one Peter Costello?
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I ran was because he bans me and Crikey from attending the budget lockup, and I just basically said that's really churlish, and if you can ban me from the lockup, but you can't ban me from running against you and Higgins, which is absolutely true. And I negotiated an on-air preferences deal with the Labor Senator Stephen Conroy that the Labor Party won't have such a similar churlish ban. And I saw Peter Costello at the Paran RSL on one of the booths at 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And once again, he was laughing at my how-to-vote card, which said sort of silly things like, you know, Stephen Mayne was assaulted by Costello backer Glenn Milne, so, you know, you should feel sorry for him by voting for him. So we had a bit of a chuckle about that, but he wouldn't give any ground on the whole budget ban. And I also told him I planned to take 3% off him in Toorak, his stronghold, and I got 3.25% in Toorak. So I was quite happy to do that. But he seemed very, very chirpy. He's actually very personable on the booths. He got round to all 37 booths. He literally spent the whole day, he voted at 8 o'clock in Camberwell, and spent the whole day in his car driving around 15 minutes on the booth. He would shake the hands of the Family First workers, but he wouldn't shake the hands of anyone else because Family First was directing preferences to him. But he was very, very supportive of all his booth workers. He had three of them to a big party on Saturday night. And, yeah, I think he's a big loss to the Parliament, to be perfectly honest. And
would you like to have seen him leading the party?
I think he would have been a terrific opposition leader, but I can absolutely understand his hissy fit because the party's treated him appallingly. I mean, he told them he was the man. They rejected him. They've been wiped out because of John Howard. And why should he do 6 years of hard yards after he told them, all his colleagues, what should have happened, and they just didn't back him? And so I think he deserves to have a very prosperous and successful corporate career, and I think he'd make a fantastic top 50 company chairman. I really hope he goes down that public company route of being a professional director, because we don't see enough cross-pollination in Australia between our political class and our corporate class, and Peter Costello would be the best candidate that the corporate world has yet seen presenting himself.
You don't think that if you really want it and if you haven't persuaded your colleagues the first time, you then set out and you actively try and persuade them yourself to give the prize to you or to go and forcibly take it? I mean, you don't wait for it to be given to you, do you?
Well, I mean, Alexander Downer's comment last night on the 7:30 report was pretty interesting, that the Liberal Party doesn't do knock them down, drag them out, destructive, you know, destroy the government leadership challenges like Paul Keating did. Not when in government. I mean, Peter Costello he wasn't going to tear the government down to get the prime ministership. He represented to his colleagues very strongly that he was the one, and they rejected him, and he didn't go through the motions of a dual challenge, you know,
to the backbench and the like.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that just would have been destructive. I can understand him not doing that. His loyalty to the Liberal Party was over and above that, but it's ridiculous for the Liberal Party to then turn around and say, oh, you know, Cozzy, you've let us down, you're leaving us in our hour of need, when they frankly treated him appallingly in not giving him the job earlier. He would have been a terrific Prime Minister, he would have been a terrific opposition leader, and now he's the loss to the Parliament, and, you know, John Howard's got a heck of a lot to answer for that, if you ask me.
Let's run through some of the corporate winners and losers from the election. What happens to the much-discussed and controversial Gunns paper mill in Tasmania?
Well, look, I went to the Gunns AGM 10 days ago.
Yes, you did.
In Tasmania, and I've got a sneaking suspicion that it might not get over the line, that Gunns shares fell 18 cents to $3.45 yesterday in a market that was 2% higher. So they were the biggest loser on the market yesterday. And I told the chairman at the AGM, I said, you guys have been absolutely incompetent in the way you've handled this mill. When Dick Pratt got a new pulp mill up at Tumut in New South Wales, he had the ACF involved as consultants, whereas, you know, the Gunns approach is to, you know, sue politicians and greenies, do renovations on the Premier's house, all this just appalling PR stuff. And I think that Garrett in the Cabinet and Greens in the balance of power, that you might see a different tone coming onto things in Tasmania. And,
well, presumably the Greens in the Senate, that is going to be their bottom line. That'll be the immovable argument in any negotiations about anything. It'll involve, we don't want that paper mill to go ahead.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And the Greens have, you know, received 20% in parts of Tasmania. So the Greens have received a very big vote, but there's bipartisan support for the mill. So, I mean, the Gunns CEO, John Gay, he made a good point at the AGM where he said, this is not about the mill, this is about logging of old growth. And I think that's actually right, because, I mean, my position is, if you're going to log old growth, you may as well have a mill as well.
Mm,
I mean,
sure, you may as well do something with it.
do something with it. Don't just send chips off to Japan.
Yep.
So you either have neither or both.
Yes.
And I think that's the big question. If they then, the mill locks in old growth logging for a long time, because once you've spent $2 billion building a mill, And then you've got to have guarantee of supply, which the state government in Tasmania will deliver. But once the mill falls over, if it does, then I think there's a big chance that you'll see Tasmania go the way of every other state and phase out old growth logging in the next sort of 5 to 10 years. And I mean, frankly, I think that's what a lot of Australians would want to see. But you know, if the reality is that there is bipartisan support for old growth logging long term in Tasmania, then you may as well have a mill to add a bit of value to it.
Yep. I understand retailers Harvey Norman and JB Hi-Fi think that they're in with a chance given the computer for every schoolchild policy.
Well, it's funny. You would have thought that sort of John Howard's debt-funded consumer binge, which we've seen in the last 11 years, which has left households with $1 trillion in debt, that maybe there wouldn't be such encouragement for that consumer society in with a Labor government. But gee whiz, JB Hi-Fi shares rose 84 cents to $15.60 yesterday. Harvey Norman got close to a record, up 20 cents. And that is just driven by the whole computers in schools thing, that they just think there's going to be massive sales of computers, and the retailers all benefited. And other retailers weren't so strongly supported. Woolworths was only up 30 cents to $31.80. And I think Woolworths might be one of the losers from this, that they are going to cop a prices inquiry. I mean, we have the most concentrated retail grocery sector in the world. Woolies and Coles control 80%. Woolies shares have gone from, you know, $4 to $31.80 under John Howard, and they're incredibly powerful, and they have been pushing prices up, and they have been, in my view, you know, unfairly screwing their suppliers, and we're going to have a prices inquiry from Kevin Rudd. So I think that Woolies, and similarly possibly the banks as well, which have made an absolute fortune under John Howard, with basically Peter Costello saying that nothing was wrong with any bank fee he'd ever seen, and the banks just making huge profits. Be interesting to see what Wayne Swan's approach is. And
Think it will be?
Well, during the campaign, he said, I'll quote you, during the campaign, he said, I'm not in the business of giving banks advice one way or the other. And Peter Costello was noticeably attacking the banks for, saying you can't push up interest rates more than the official interest rates. And an interesting piece on the back page of the business section of The Australian today suggesting that the Commonwealth Bank might lead the charge in trying to push for more increases in interest rates based on the changes in the wholesale markets, the whole subprime wipeout in the US. And Commonwealth Bank shares were up $1.10 yesterday to $58.30. Now, I would have thought that banks would be less likely to get away with interest rate rises and huge fee increases like we've seen in the last 11 years, because the Howard government has that whole light-handed touch to regulation, whereas, you know, Paul Keating famously used to belt into the banks all the time when they closed a branch in the bush. So Wayne Swan's approach will be very, very interesting, and I, for one, hope that the Rudd family sell their $300,000 worth of big bank shares, because this is a really big issue. You've got big four banks that are worth $250 billion, that are making $25 billion a year, in my view, ripping off a lot of Australians. And I think that as the Prime Minister, he needs to be taking a tougher line on that. And the first thing he needs to do is to not have a financial interest in the value of our big four banks. And their disclosures to the Parliament show that he's got $300,000 worth of big bank shares, which hopefully he won't have for long.
What's he going to have to do with his and his family's investments and money and the like? Will it be any different to what he's had to do as a Member of Parliament anyway?
Well, he does disclose. I mean, I think the sale of the Ingeus, Therese Raines' Australian business, I mean, the terms of that need to be revealed. Who's bought it? I mean, presumably it's been sold for tens of millions of dollars. I mean, the business turns over vast sums of money based on federal government contracts. So I'm actually quite surprised that no industrious journalist has yet asked the question or turned up the actual what were the terms of the sale. I mean, they've announced the sale, but, you know, to who, for what, with what guarantees, is it contingent on continuing federal government contracts,
right,
which obviously it has to be. And I think that he's got to sell any government-dependent shares. Like, he should be selling his PBL shares and he should be selling his CSL shares, because CSL has the monopoly government blood contract.
Yep.
So I don't think the Rudds can continue to own $200,000 or $300,000 worth of CSL shares whilst enjoying a lucrative government monopoly and massive government funding for things like Gardasil, the anti-cancer drug. So I think that there'll be some interesting debate around that, and I hope that the Rudds take a view of sell anything with a vague conflict and disclose everything relevant and be cleaner than clean.
Just before you go, Stephen Mayne, I know you want to add your voice to noting the passing, the death of Bernie Banton, the tireless campaigner against Hardy Industries. We've only got a few seconds left, but he's died this morning, age 61.
Look, his legacy is just absolutely phenomenal. I was at that Hardy's meeting where they approved the deal. Bernie was there. I got to meet him, and he was an incredibly spirited campaigner who has left a fantastic legacy. So I was very pleased Kevin Rudd actually mentioned him on Saturday night too, because he's an amazing man.
Stephen, good to have you back on board. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Virginia.